The title this year is Ulechaparas Pasha, The Complex Meanings of Kapara. Actually, I have a Makoros sheet that I'm going to share right now in the group, in the chat, so everyone can just click on the link and pull it up. I first wanted to say thank you all for joining this and the call, and it's really wonderful that there are opportunities to share Torah, not only in person, but for reasons of tzorach, of obvious need, it's possible to learn together over Zoom as well, and that's it's a bracha amidst all the challenges that we're facing. So I thought the topic of kapara, aside from being of great interest to me in general, is particularly relevant right now, both because it's Erev Rosh Chodesh, we'll talk about that in a second, and because it's almost Parshas Vayikra. We're about to talk about karbanos in great detail in the Torah. So I thought I'd mention the relevance of Kapara to Rosh Chodesh and Sefer Vayikra, and then we'll try to figure out what exactly Kapara means and how, we'll see it'll have multiple meanings, and how to make some sense of that, both in the context of Karbanos and maybe even beyond. So I included on the Makoros sheet, if you have it, if you don't, you probably still know this text, the bracha, the fourth bracha of Musaf Rosh Chodesh, which makes a bunch of references to Kapara. Rashecha Rashim Amchana Sata Zman Kapara L'chol Todosam. The Rosh Chodesh is a time of Kapara. And it mentions the Sirecha Taslecha Per Ba'adam, that we bring a karban chatas, a goat for a karban chatas. Of course, that's explicitly mentioned in the Torah in the laning on Rosh Chodesh. And the Mishnah in Shavuos explains, it's actually machlokes, what exactly that's mechaper for, what that karban chatas atones for. This is actually source number two. There's a machlokes. One opinion is that it atones for a veros of tumas mikdash vekadshav she'ein bo yediyah lo betchila lo basof, meaning a case where someone becomes tamei and goes into the Beis HaMikdash, thereby defiling the Beis HaMikdash without having realized that they were tamei, either before or after. They never realized. So instead of that person, obviously can't bring a karban because they don't know that they did anything wrong, but in the Beis HaMikdash, once a month, on Rosh Chodesh, they bring a karban that is mechaper for that sort of tumah, that resolves that avera, that cleanses the mikdash from that tumah, and that's one opinion of why we bring a chatas on Rosh Chodesh. And the other opinion, that's Rav Yehuda's opinion, Rav Shimon argues and says, no, that's what Siri Regalim are mechaper for, Siri Rashi Chadashim are mechaper for something else, for tahor she'achales hatame, for presumably a kohen who eats truma that's tame, that's an avera as well. If you don't realize that, you bring this karban to resolve that sin. So that's an important part of Rosh Chodesh, is this aspect of kapara. And interestingly, it makes sense, but it's somewhat interesting that it's a karban tzibur, it's a communal karban, it's not brought by individuals, it's brought by kohanim on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael, which is why it's mechaper for these averos that no individual actually knows that they did, right? Either being metame the mikdash or eating something that's kodesh, but tame, and you never realize, this resolves that avera. But Rosh Chodesh is clearly a time of kapara, and I'll just add, the Gemara and Shavuos Daf Tes, says there's something interesting about the kapara of Rosh Chodesh. Manishtana si'ir shal Rosh Chodesh enemra bo la'ashem. We specify by the chatas of Rosh Chodesh that it's la'ashem. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu si'ir zeh yehe kapara al shemi atiti es hayareach. That it's a sort of kapara for Hashem, whatever that means. That's surprising. Hashem is somehow getting atonement for having made the moon smaller at the time of Bereishis, right? There's two ma'oros. There's a big one and a small one. It's not fair to the moon. This is some sort of kapara for the moon on Rosh Chodesh, which of course is based on the moon, to be mechaper for that. So that's the theme of kapara on Rosh Chodesh. And just to quickly glance at one of the cases where kapara comes up in our parsha, source number four on the sheet, the karban chatas, Perek Dalid of Vayikra discusses the karban chatas in a fair amount of detail. I just gave a short snippet. In the case of someone, your average person who brings a chatas yachid, if a person does an avera, there's a whole process of what you do, and at the end of the process, the result is v'chiper alav hakohen v'nislachlo, that the kohen is mechaper for him v'nislachlo, which is that's in the passive, right? He is forgiven. So it's clear who does the kapara, not what we usually think, but if you read the psukim, it says the Kohen does the kapara. So what could kapara mean if the Kohen's doing it? And then nislach lo, in the passive, he's forgiven. Presumably, we use the passive because, you know, we don't always like saying that Hashem does things. In the active, it's unseemly. We sort of say, you know, it's like, it's done. Hashem took care of it. He's nislach. He's forgiven by Hashem. We don't spell that out explicitly. But this phrase, v'chiper lav ha'kohen v'nislach lo, in one form or another, repeats itself multiple times in Perek Dalet and also in Perek Hey of Vayikra. So we're going to try to now figure out how exactly kapara works, what the word means, and what that tells us about the phenomenon of kapara, about how the process itself works. If there were more students on the call, maybe I would have asked this as a people to throw out their answers. Although maybe even here too, only if people opt in. But if I asked you to translate the word kapara, what word might you use? How would you translate it? You don't have to answer. It's okay. But so usually
I'm okay with helping you out. So I would say atonement or forgiveness, depending on whether it's you're looking at it as what I do or what's done to me. So the forgiveness would be done to me, and the atonement would be sort of what I do.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Right. And I think certainly atonement is probably the most used translation. And forgiveness is definitely closely related to kapara, but it's a little tricky to, if we're talking about translating that pasuk that we just saw, it's hard to say, it's hard to translate kapara as forgiveness too, because it has to be, it's presumably a little different than slicha. There's presumably some gap there in pshat in the psukim. But yeah, there's definitely an aspect of forgiveness in atonement.
What's the hashlam with regard to, for example, the kapara? So there's an element of covering, perhaps.
Okay, yes, an element of covering. Great. So that, yeah, we're...
On the table, it says the kaparta also, the covering.
Yeah, we're going to see that's source number 5. So I think you're being mechaven to all the sources, so this is good. So there's definitely a range of possible meanings. And one thing we're going to have to figure out is how kapara works, both in general, in the sense that we use it, and in the psukim, how you fit that back into the psukim, what it means for the kohen to be mechaper on the mizbeach, or to be mechaper for a person by doing things to the mizbeach, how exactly that works. So that's going to be our challenge. And I think as some of these answers indicated, there's really a range of different meanings or different uses of the term kapara, or the root kaper, throughout Tanakh. So, interestingly, we'll see a Rishonim Mefarshim like quoting the following pasuk a lot. On the bottom of page 1, this is the story with Yaakov and Esav, and the pasuk Kaf Aleph, Amartem, Gam Hinei Avdecha Yaakov Acharenu, Ki Amar Achapira Fanav, Bamincha Haoleches Lefanai. He said, let me appease Esav. Yaakov's coming because he said, let me appease Esav by bringing him this present. And the language for appeasement here is achapara fanav, right? I will, if you translate kapara as atonement, I will atone for his face. That obviously doesn't work in a literal sense, but if we use the meaning of forgiveness or something close to it that Dean Stolzloiki mentioned, so there's an aspect of appeasement or something, or making up between people, right? Having people get along. And that's what Yaakov's trying to do. He's trying to get Esav to get along with him better. We'll see how the Mefarshim translate literally, but that's certainly the context, the meaning in context. On the other hand, as Dr. Weissman pointed out, we have the pasuk by the Teva, the first appearance of the verb, kaf peresh, which is that you cover the Teva with kofer, pitch, so v'chafar ta'osa. And so it seems to be pretty clear, kofer is called pitch because it covers things. The verb kafar is to cover. It also means to deny something, right? When you're denying something, you're covering it over. So you cover the teva with this pitch, with this kofar. So that seems to be a different meaning. That seems to not necessarily fit so well with the other uses. So we're going to have to see how these all work together. And then sources number 6 and 7 have an entirely different meaning of the root kaf peresh, which is the term that usually the noun form uses, kofer, right, to kofar as a sense of a ransom or a redemption to redeem someone's life. So we just read this. One of the last things we read in Kriyas Torah publicly is Parsha Shkalim. V'nasnu ish kofar nasho. And the Kisisa, everyone has to give the half shekel as kofar nafsho, as somehow a price or a redemption of their soul, of their life. You can't, right, because if you don't give the chatzi shekel, there'll be a negef, right? The veloya negef, giving the chatzi shekel, that's a kofar, that's a redemption, or even you can call it a ransom, in order to save your life from a negef, right? And that's, of course, the idea that you count people, you count Bnei Yisrael directly, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's an ayin hara, that leads to negef, that all comes from this pasuk. But the way to resolve that is to give the chatzi shekel, machazis shekel, which is a kofar, which is a form of ransoming or saving people's lives. And it even uses, in those psukim, tesvav and tezayin, it uses the language lichaper al nafsho seichem, which is the standard lashon we use for kapara in general, right? Just like karbanos are mechaper, the same way, the same language at least, the machazis shekel is mechaper. So maybe kapara in general has this idea of ransom. And similarly, velosi kru chofer lenefesh rotzeach, the idea of murderers having to get punished for their sins, and you can't buy your way out of the death penalty, that again is that same usage of kofar. And then a couple more psukim that give slightly different meanings. Pasuk in Yeshayahu, source number 8 here, talking about also, again, a plague or something bad that's happening. Uvalecha ra'a lo seid ishach ra, visipol alayich hova lo suchli kapera. Something bad that happens to you, maybe hova here, maybe mean a plague, and lo suchli kapera. You can't sort of get rid of it. You can't send it away or maybe wipe it away. So that seems to be a different meaning than what we've discussed until now. Right? There's no appeasement here. It doesn't seem like it's about covering it. Right? It seems like you're trying to get it away. Okay. We can have it on the general screen. We're up to... Oh, we're back. Okay. In case anyone was relying on that, we're up to source number 8. So the pasuk in Yeshayahu seems to be about sending it away, which is different than covering, which is different than appeasement.
I'm just going to put up the sources for Rabbi Kopfer.
Sure.
Okay, so I'm just going to open it again.
Sure. And then the source number 9 is a story with David and the Givonim where they're trying to make up. And he says, "Uvama achaper, uvarchu es nachas Hashem." How can I atone? But it doesn't mean atone towards Hashem, or in a general sense, it means how can I make it up to you? How can we appease each other? How can we forgive each other and come closer together? So we see just in the psukim themselves, there's really a range of different meanings of the term kaper, and sort of not surprisingly, the mefarshim try to work out what exactly it means, and we end up, if we go through the Mefarshim, which we're going to do in the next few minutes, we'll see that there's a range of views among the Mefarshim as well, at trying to make sense of these different meanings in the Psukim. So, as I mentioned before, the meaning of Achaprafanav, that Pasuk, was with the story with Yaakov and Esav, is particularly important. A lot of Mefarshim point to it. So Rashi says, Achap Rafanav means Avatel Rogzo. I'll get rid of his anger. I'll send away his anger, or cancel, nullify his anger. And Rashi says, Rashi is clearly building on Unculus, Anichine Le Rogze. I'll get rid of his anger. That's Unculus there. And what's interesting is he doesn't focus on the aspect of appeasement. Right? Rashi could have said, focus on the relationship between Yaakov and Esav. Instead, he focuses on the anger almost as an object that you're getting rid of, canceling, or sending away. And then Rashi says this is a general principle. V'nira ve'enai shekol kapara she'etzel avon v'chet ve'etzel panim. The word kapara, both in the context of averos and in the context of faces, presumably relationships, kulan lashon kinuach v'ha'avarahin. It's all the meaning of wiping away and sending away. That's Rashi here saying that's the meaning always. That's the consistent meaning. And he says it's actually an Aramaic term, Lashon Arami, who harbe v'talmud v'chiper yadeh, bay l'chapur yadeh v'au gavr. He gives a bunch of examples where the Gemara uses this term, but he says that's also the meaning in Chumash. That's the pshat meaning of l'chaper. It means to wipe away or to send away something. So here, achabrafanav means panav, presumably means not just face, but angry face. So Esav is angry at Yaakov, and Yaakov wants to wipe away his angry face, send it away, and cleanse it in that way. So Rashi, interestingly, seems to go with the direction of removal, hasara, like we saw in the pasuk in Yeshayahu, lo suchli kapira, you won't be able to send it away or wipe it away, and that's how Rashi understands kapara in general, the meaning kapara. Relatedly, Rashi on that, on actually a different pasuk in Yeshayahu, source number 12, of the chupar brischem es maves, your covenant will be resolved, so or canceled, vis batel habris, that means to cancel it, the same idea, you can undo something by sort of wiping it away, getting rid of it. So that's how Rashi, at least in these cases, is consistent with defining kapara. Similarly, the Radak, following Rashi, says, achaprafanav asir kasa, I'll remove his anger, kol lashon kapara inyan hasara. Atonement, kapara, or I shouldn't say atonement, kapara always means to remove something. And he quotes similar psukim to Rashi. And the Radak, of course, was a great grammarian, and he follows Rashi on this meaning. So the question is, Rashi says kapara by karbanos is about hasara, is about removing something, or about kinuach the ha'avara, wiping away and getting rid of something. So how does that really work with karbanos? Right, if you bring a karban, the kohen is mechaper. So what's he actually being mechaper? So I think to answer that question, there is a fascinating midrash that in the Sifra that I think it doesn't get enough attention, really, for a few different reasons. It's a very important source that I think may give some insight into how this idea of wiping away works in our case, and especially understanding that the Kohen is the one being mechaper, at least in the Psukim, in Vayikra. So this is the Sifra, the Toras Kohanim, on Parshas Achrimos, and it's talking about the Sire Lifnai Lifnim, which bring the blood in the Kodesh Kodashim, and the Kapara that does. And he says, the Medr says, V'chiper al HaKodesh, or this is the Pasuk, V'chiper al HaKodesh mitum os b'nei Yisrael, v'mipishahem l'chol chatosam, v'chein yaseh lo olmoid. By putting the blood on the Kapores, which I think Dr. Shmimi mentioned the Kapores, putting the blood on the Kapores and in the Kodesh Kodashim, that is mechaper, not only for averos, for pishayim and chataos, but also for tuma. It's mechaper for both sins and for impurity. So what exactly does that mean? So the Sifra is trying to figure this out. Yesh li b'inyan hazeh lahavi shlosha tumos. I have three examples of tumos, of impurity that results from an avera, that this process may be resolving. What are the three? Tumas avodah zarah. Avodah zarah leads to Tuma, k'moshe namar, lema'an tameyas mikdashi, u'chaleel es shem kadshi. If I recall correctly, that's actually in the context of molech, that if you do molech, that is very upsetting to Hashem, and what among the results is it's mitame the mikdash. It's mechal shem Hashem, but it's also mitame the mikdash. Somehow, doing molech, if I, you know, I'm somewhere in the Shomron, and chas v'shalom, I offer my firstborn to molech, or some. Let's make someone else in the example. That not only is a chil Hashem, but also creates tuma in the mikdash. Wow, very very surprising pasuk. And our medrash seems to take that literally, right? It creates tuma in the mikdash, and that's why you need the sa'ir on Yom Kippur to remove that tuma from the mikdash. That was done. That somehow the tuma arrives there based on certain averos. So that's the first example. Also, tumas giluy arayos. Doing the various arayos leads to tumah for the people who do the averos. And this, again, this is the sort of tumah. You can't go to the mikvah and get rid of this tumah. This is the sort of tumah that you need the sa'ir on Yom Kippur to resolve. And then the third avera, tumah shvichus damim. Shenemar velo sitamei ha'aretz asher atem yoshvim ba'asher anisoch shochem besocham. Right? That murder is metamei the Aretz. This is a theme that goes all the way back to Cain and Hevel, and appears throughout the Torah many times. But that murder, unjustified killing, creates tuma in the land. So these three examples are examples where an avera leads to tuma, and this is not your usual, you know, what you can call ritual tuma. This is not the tuma that you can, go to the mikvah or bring a karban just to get rid of the tumah itself. It's a karban that it's a tumah that creates much larger problems and needs a special karban on Yom Kippur in order to resolve. And if you notice, the three examples, of course, are the shalosh chamuros, what some people call the big three, avodah zarah, gilui arayos, and shfichas damim. We usually associate them both because their severity, the chomer of these averos, and you have to give up your life rather than violate them. Here, this medrash is focusing on a different aspect that the three have in common, which is not just the chil Hashem chomer avera aspect, but also this idea of tumah, that it defiles various things. Actually, the three examples seem to have three different items being defiled: the mikdash, the people doing the averos, and the land in Eretz Yisrael. So these averos are very powerful, and it's necessary to have a karban on Yom Kippur, the sa'ir la'Hashem, to resolve them. But how exactly does the sa'ir serve to resolve these tumos? Right, I know how. Well, however, karbanos work to resolve averos. How do they work to resolve tumah? So one of the theories that's been presented, I think, makes the most sense given these makoros, is that the way you get tumah out of the mikdash, the tumah that's placed in the mikdash, as the pasuk says, leman tameis mikdashi, is through the process of bringing karbanos. And you bring a karban chatas lifnai v'lifnim in the kodesh kadashim. Those very severe averos that were metame, even the holiest part of the mikdash, even the kodesh kadashim, by putting blood on the kapores and on the other areas in the kodesh kadashim, you're somehow wiping away the avera. It's like a cleansing process of sorts. Whether this is a metaphor or not, however exactly you define it, it sounds like that's the process that the Sifra is talking about. These averos create a tumah in the holiest parts of the mikdash, and this karban is somehow a process that wipes it away. And that's what fits well with Rashi as saying that every meaning of kapara is a lashon kinuach v'ha'avara. Every kapara is wiping away some of that tumah, and maybe the bigger averos create a tumah lifnai v'lifnim, and maybe smaller averos create a tumah only in the mizbeach that can be resolved by just putting the blood on the mizbeach hachitzon and cleansing it in that way. But maybe it's possible to understand Rashi and the Sifra as pointing to this idea of kapara as hasara. Of course, in the interpersonal realm, it also makes a lot of sense, because this metaphor of wiping away or sending away someone's unhappy face can also mean restoring a relationship. If you're upset with someone, they have an upset face, you can somehow resolve that by sending away their face and being mechaper in that way. So I think that's at least one way of understanding this approach in Rashi and other mefarshim, that kapara is hasara, which again is probably maybe the least intuitive, or the least, the understanding that we maybe associate the least with kapara, but has these very important mekoros behind it, so it's good to understand. The Ramban on that same pasuk, Achapra Fanav, quotes Rashi and Unkelus, Kedarko, as he often does, and he actually disagrees with them. He takes a different approach. He says what Rashi and Unkelus are saying is true in Aramaic, but it's not true in Hebrew. In Aramaic, kapara means to wipe something away or send it away, but in Hebrew that's not true. And he writes, Aval hanachon ki ata hosif lefarish lahem, they're saying he's also coming behind us. That's a sort of way of honoring him. Why is Yaakov behind Esav? So that's what they're saying. Yaakov is behind Esav precisely as a way of showing kavod, of showing honor to Esav. And that's part of this process of kapara. How so? Kasher yitnu ha'avadim kofram b'seis lahem rishus liros pnei ha'melech. Now, we know how difficult access to political figures can be in general, but in a world where there are kings, powerful kings, it's not just something that's hard to do, it's something that's life-threatening. We know this from the Megillah, right? If you go and see the king without being invited, achas daso lahamis, you can get killed for that. So the way there are different ways that you can get the kofar, you can have a sort of ransom or redemption for your life to be able to see the king. And that's what Yaakov is invoking here. Yaakov's presenting himself. He's walking behind Esav. He's saying, you're the melech. I need to be, you know, I need to be mechaper panech. I need to somehow earn the right to see you without forfeiting my life. The acharechein erefanav ki ula yisa panai v'yichabdeni. After I do that, after I'm mechabit him in this way, thinks Yaakov, then maybe I'll have the kavod, the honor of being able to meet with him, and of course try to make up. Liosi meroe pneimach, for me to be someone who's able to see the king. You can't see the king for free. You need a, you know, it's a life threatening process, and if you somehow deserve to do it or are able to do it, you need that redemption, that kofar. Vized derech mala miyiraso mimenu. It's even stronger than fear, right? It's that your life is subjugated to the king. Uva achaprafanav kederech viish chacham yichaprena yitain kofar al hachema. Right? It's somehow giving this kofar, giving this ransom for the anger. Because if you go up to a king uninvited, that creates a certain anger. Your life is in danger. You need to pay a ransom, pay a redemption in order to avoid that. And this is where he says Rashi's opinion, Lashon Kinuach B'Kofer, in Enu Lashon Kodesh, Rak Lashon Aramis. That's not true for Hebrew. That's true for Aramaic. V'chein, Kibrei Zahav, Shema Mizrakim B'Bavel. Fine, he talks about the etymology there a bit at the end. So this is a different view of what Kapara is. Kapara is really always about redemption. And, you know, I think it's fairly easy to extrapolate from this to the various cases. Let's say the case in Vayikra, Perek Dal, the classic case of a Karban Chatas, you'd have to say something like, if you do an Avera, and the Ramban himself says this, maybe I should have cited it in Parshas Vayikra, that you do certain Averos, you, in a sense, you forfeit your right to live. Right? HaNefesh HaChotes HiTamos, as the Navi says, and there's a need to redeem yourself, to earn your right to life back. And for different Karbanos, that, or different Averos, that process will be slightly different. But the goal of a carbon, a standard carbon, is to be mechaper, is to sort of buy back your right to live following the avera. So it's not about it, right? And so the kohen is mechaper just because he's initiating the process, he's doing the physical aspects of the process. But the real process of kapara is earned by the person who brings the carbon to the mikdash to have the kohen bring it for him, and Hashem grants that kapara. But the kapara is really focused on your life. So a nice idea associated with this, in Vayikra Yud Zayin Yud Aleph, we talk about, it's not on the sheet, we talk about, it talks about dam, the power of dam to be mechaper. And the pasuk says, ki adam hu banefesh yichaper. The blood is somehow atones or is mechaper in the soul. There's a whole host of understandings of what exactly that pasuk means, but at least one approach is that dam, blood is the life force of the animal, and it represents the life of the animal for that reason, right? The dam of the animal, you need blood to live, so the blood of the animal represents the life of the animal, and because the sinner deserves to die, the avarian has a chiyuv maves, so to speak, it's redeemed by offering the dam of this animal. The animal sort of stands in for the sinner, and the blood of the animal stands in for the animal, and that's how kapara works according to that pasuk. That may be giving the general theory for how kapara works. So it's just a goal. The goal is to somehow offer the blood of the animal in your stead, in the stead of the avarian, and thereby ransom or redeem his life. So that's the approach of the Ramban. A third approach in the Mefarshim is sure. So that's very interesting, right? The more you say there's this process that works, actually this really works for either of the first two approaches, right? Whether the process is one of wiping away the avera, or whether the process is one of redeeming the life of the sinner, one could argue that that's just totally mechanical, right? You could say, well, it's just follow these rules, take these actions, and the kapara just happens, right? It's just a process. And the person who did the avera isn't even directly involved, right? It's the kohen doing it. The kohen puts the dam on the mizbeach, it wipes it away, or it redeems him, and that's it. That's definitely not how Chazal understand the psukim, and we'll at least touch on that at a first stage. But I think you have to even for Chazal and for really any understanding of these psukim, you have to acknowledge that there is a certain aspect that there is a certain set of rules that have to be followed for kapara in the mikdash. So, you know, even granting that an additional process or the primary process is the intention and the goals of the makriv, you still need, or the makriv being the person who did the aveira and brings the karban, you still need to explain what the process is and how it works. So I think at the end of the day, you're going to end up with a two-sided process. Part of it is mechanical, and that's why the Kohen is doing all these actions. We can't dispense with that. You can't get kapara for your aveiras of a certain type without that process. But at the same time, there's a need for various intentions and wills and personal requirements on the part of the person bringing the carbon in order for that to work. But yeah, that's, I think it's an important point to emphasize.
Doesn't speak about how the mechanics informs or motivates the intention? The mechanics has an intrinsic role in creating the intention.
Sure, that's one way of unifying the approaches. I think that may even go back, if I recall, to the Ibn Ezra, who says that you see the karban, the animal killed in front of you, and I think the Ramban elaborates on this too, and the different parts of the animal representing the different parts of your body that do averos, and that inspires you to do tshuva. Yeah, that's certainly at least one approach of trying to integrate those two aspects, the mechanical with the, whether you want to call it moral or ethical or tshuva, or however you want to refer to the other part. One approach is to integrate them and show how really one, they're connected and one's building right off the other. If we can move now to a different approach, and I think the next couple of approaches are less mechanical in the focus of the language, which I think is will help underscore some of the differences in these meanings. So the Ritva actually on the Gemara about Miut Levana, but just in passing, he talks about the meaning of the kapara in general, and he says lashon kapara zehu kolel shnei dvarim. In the Gemara about how Hashem gets a kapara for himself, it sounds like, for making the moon smaller. How do you understand that? So the Ritva says in that Gemara, really kapara has two different things at the same time. Lashon kapara mamish, it's both atonement in a literal sense, and that's why you bring the karban on the mizbeach. That's mechaper for whatever is mechaper before, and as we saw in the Mishnah, for tumas mikdash v'kadshav, whether of the mikdash or of eating something tamei. So that's one meaning, and at the same time, the lashon pius, and also a language of appeasement. Kilshon achapra fanav b'mincha. As we saw in the pasuk, we said the straightforward meaning of that pasuk is appeasement. Right, Yaakov is trying to appease Esav by giving him a gift. All right, even though Rashi says it means to wipe away, and the Ramban says it means to ransom or redeem yourself. Pashup Shah in the pasuk is it's appeasement, and that's what the Ritva uses to prove his point. Avehachi kamar kapara shelachem, your kapara on Rosh Chodesh for these various averos of tumas mikdash v'kadshav sheheba pius alai lelavana shemi atitia. It's a twofer, right? It's a two for the price of one. You bring this karban. Number one, it helps you get kapara. Number two, I Hashem am appeased. I feel better. Kaviyachol, whatever that means. I feel better about this thing I did by making the moon smaller, which, you know, somehow I could use some appeasement for. This plays that role as well. So the Ritva is not saying, well, even though he says, he seems to say that kapara at least can mean appeasement in addition to meaning kapara in the more classical atonement sense. But the Ritva is not alone. The Metzudas Tzion says achaper inyan bitul haroges, right? To be mechaper someone, kamo achapra fanav, to be mechaper someone means to get rid of their anger, to appease them. And even Rashi says this. This is Rashi going against his view before, that kapara always means hasara. Here he seems to take a different focus. V'chiper, I think this is v'chiper ad maso amo, v'chiper lashon ritzuyu pius. Right, it's appeasement. Kemo achapra fanav, anichine l'rogzei. Now Rashi here understands unkelus differently. Unkelus anichine l'rogzei is not a technical meaning of sending away the anger. It doesn't mean to send away or wipe away. Instead, it means It means pios. It means appeasement. So that's clearly, this is clearly one of the possible meanings of lichaper. And it's as the Ritva says, there's kapara in the more technical karban sense and kapara in the meaning of appeasement. But presumably, if you think lichaper means to appease, that will affect your understanding of kapara in the context of karbanos too. Right? The reason a karban works is that somehow by bringing a karban, it serves to appease Hashem for the avera that the avarian did, and thereby to resolve some of the problems in that relationship that was created by the avera. So the approach of pius is much less focused on the mechanics and is much more about the relationship between the makriv and Hashem. And then the final meaning, which again we saw all these meanings in the psukim in some form in pshat in the psukim. This final meaning is the idea of a covering, and the Ibn Ezra. This is back on the psukim in Bereishis by or Parshas Noach with the teva v'chafarta sabavais michutz bakofer lashon mechase lechaper is to be mechase, to cover over something ubaavur ze nikra hakofer kofer migzeras kaparta, right? The pitch that's used to cover things is called kofer because it means to cover something. V'gam v'chiper alav hakohen, same thing. The pasuk we saw in Vayikra, any time a kohen is mechaper. What does that mean? The coin is mechaper biderech kaper chata'a. It's by covering over the sin. You cover over the sin, and that's how you resolve the avera. That's how karbanos chatas at least work. Fine, and we see other mefarshim say this as well. Actually, the Alshich has an interesting idea that why do you need to cover the teva mibayis umichutz? Because heyosa zefes gam mibayis lechaparas avon. You cover it on the outside to keep the rain out, and you put the kofar on the inside to protect the people inside from their avera. It's almost like a karban. Somehow putting the kofar on the inside of the teva is almost like a karban of wiping away the averas of the people inside. I guess before you had karbanos in a system of karbanos, you can do things a little differently. Almost like some argue Pesach Mitzrayim. The Medrash indicates Pesach Mitzrayim, putting the dam on the mashkof and the shtei mezuzos. The Medrash there says, the Mechilta there says, it's like three mizbechos. There's three mizbeachs. The mashkof and the two mezuzos are each like a mizbeach, and presumably that's because putting the blood there is not just some magic to ward off the mashchis, but it actually is also mechaper for the people inside in some form, like a mizbeach. So presumably this is some parallel idea of that, the zephes functioning as an atoning thing. But how does it work? It works by covering over the avera, just like you cover over the teva. And Rav Shimshon Lefal Hirsch, I'm sorry I didn't provide the original German, but I think many of us are better off with a translation. He says that horaz hayesod, the root kofer, means kisui magen omonea, something that covers or protects or prevents. Fine. Hu magen al etzem leval yushba minachutz. It protects the thing inside, the core thing, so it doesn't get influenced from the outside. And just skipping a bit, he talks about in terms of chet, kaper biyachas lechet matzui b'shtei ahoraos, kaper al hanefesh min hachet, to atone for the person or the soul from the sin. So that's lahagen al hanefesh mipnei totzos hachet, to protect the sinner from the results of the sin. So right, whenever you do an avera, there's an onesh. This is a way of protecting you from that avera, number one. Number two, kaper al avon, right? Kapara, the direct object of kapara, is not just the sinner, it's also the sin. How does that work? Or kapar al pesha, levatil as totzao sachet, limno as sachet mi lahashpia al hanefesh. So it also blocks the chet from having an influence on you. So it both blocks the punishment from affecting you and blocks the sin from affecting you from sort of poisoning your soul. But in both these cases, it's about blocking. It's about covering over the avera and thereby resolving it, which is, you know, similar but also sort of opposite to the idea of wiping away, of hasara. Hasara, you take it and get rid of it. Here, you're covering it over. So either way, it has no impact, but the metaphor or the metaphysics are sort of opposite. Are you leaving it here, keep covering it over, or are you sending it away? And source 22 is just an example of this idea of covering over a sin that I think the Ibn Ezra was probably referring to when he says, "Biderech kaper chata'a." He's presumably saying, just like you can be mechase a chata'a in Tehillim, ashrei nesui pesha kisui chata'a, one who has his sin covered, You can also, you can be mechaper a sin, and that's the same thing. It's just about covering over the sin. Some have also suggested that putting the blood on the Mizbeach is sort of also a way of covering over the sin, right? You put kofar on the teva, you cover the teva, you put the blood on the Mizbeach, you're covering over the sin that maybe was in the Mikdash because of your averus, as we saw in the Medrash earlier. I don't think that works as well as the wiping away, but at least that's one approach. So we've seen over the last few minutes, we've seen four different meanings of kapara and how it plays itself out, both in korbanos and generally. We saw this idea of hasara, removing, the idea of kofar, ransom or redemption, the idea of kisui, covering over, and the idea of pius, appeasement. And this is just in terms of understanding the term and understanding how it applies in the psukim. So we just have a few more minutes. I wanted to end with sort of the question of how Chazal take these ideas a step further, and particularly how to understand all of this without a mikdash. So one important theme, and I could go on for a lot longer about this, as I did in my dissertation, if you really are up for a lot of linguistic analysis. But the basic idea here is that kapara and ratzon, or the root resh tzadi hey, are parallel, are equated in many, many cases. I just gave a couple of quick examples on the sheet. The Mishnah in Zvachim says dam achatas kodem ledam haola b'bnei shehu meratze. The blood of a chatas precedes the blood of an ola. If you have both of them, you don't know which to bring first. Chatas comes first. Why? Because the dam is meratze. The dam meratze literally pleases, I guess you could translate it, or appeases. And Rashi says meratze means mechaper. The Rambam brings it down also. Dam achatas mechaper. That what it means to be meratze is to be mechaper. We find this dozens and dozens of times that ritzui is a synonym for kapara. It's not always a synonym. Sometimes it's slightly different, and there's a different emphasis. We can spend a lot of time about that, but the basic idea is that there is this very close connection. Not only that, but the root, resh tzadi hei, and the term ratzon comes up all over the place in Karbanos, in Chazal. I gave another example in Source 26, that machok is about whether nitma basar, if the meat of the carbon becomes tameh, should you bring the dam or not. But everyone agrees that if you put the dam on the mizbeach, hurtza, which presumably means you get the kapara, it works. But the language there of hurtza literally means to be accepted. The blood is accepted, and thereby the karban is accepted. Also, the idea of offering blood is hartza'as dam, right? You're offering the blood, that's hartza'a. It's received, that's hurtza. And the idea you need to have ratzon, in order to bring a karban, lirtzono, kofen osoyashim rotzani, but you need to have that ratzon, you need to be willing to bring the karban. There's even midrashim that says that Hashem needs to be willing to bring for you to bring the karban. In the context of Aaron, Hashem needs to be willing to accept it. So the language of ratzon comes up all over the place by karbanos. In sources 27 through 29 as well, we find that reach nichoach is understood by Chazal often as nachas ruach lefanai she'amarti v'nasar etzoni. Reach nichoach doesn't mean a physical smell, Chazal say. It means that I'm happy, nachas ruach, Hashem is happy, kaviyachol, that Hashem said, bring this carbon, and we listened. So that is following Hashem's ratzon is the meaning of reach nichoach. That's what makes Hashem happy about a carbon. It's not the smell, it's the fact that we're obeying Hashem's ratzon. So one challenge that Klal Yisrael had to face, one of the challenges Klal Yisrael had to face in the wake of the Churban was how to properly continue both being Ovdei Hashem generally and getting Kapara in particular in the absence of a Mikdash. You don't have the same process. You don't have a Kohen bringing Dam on the Mizbeach. So there's a lot of different ways that Chazal have found to solve that problem or to compensate for what's missing. We're not going to talk about all of them now, but one of them, I think, is to emphasize further the more relational aspects of karban. So, for example, the idea of ratzon playing such a major role in karban, emphasizing that, and the ratzon meaning being close to the pious meaning, the idea of appeasement and the relational aspect of a karban, Chazal give emphasize that significantly in their understanding of these psukim, because that's something, the relationship between the Avarian and Hashem is something that, you know, without a mikdash you can fix as well. You can't actually bring a Karban Chatas nowadays. You can talk about it in Musaf Rosh Chodesh or in other tefillos, Musaf and otherwise. So there are various different ways of trying to respond, but one of them is certainly to emphasize that the relational aspects, the pious aspects of the some person doing an aveira and how to resolve it. And this idea of keeping a following Ratzon Hashem and changing, even if you have to change the form of your avodas Hashem, but to keep the idea of doing Ratzon Hashem, fulfilling God's will in the circumstances as you have them, of course, is something that we're all facing now. The fact that this shiur is happening over Zoom rather than in person is a function of the circumstances. But the fact that Klal Yisrael is finding different ways of sharing Torah with each other and finding different ways of davening biyichidus maybe, but doing it somehow together and with added inspiration and with added introspection, these are the challenges we're facing today that are exactly parallel to the challenges Chazal faced with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So kapara is a widespread, broad concept. It has a lot of these ideas. Maybe all of them are true in some ways. Karbanos capture some of them strongly. Without karbanos, we can continue to capture these ideas and work towards improving our avodas Hashem, our relationship with Hashem, whatever the circumstances, even as the circumstances are changing.
Enjoyable but inspiring.